ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Inderjeet Burdi. Indy is the co-founder and head of strategy at AI Music. He's been pivotal throughout the company's early growth as they've revolutionized the way music is both produced and consumed. Indy has a background in finance and venture capital investing. His work at AI Music is predicated on executing the company's goals in a rapidly evolving media ecosystem. Prior to AI Music, Indy led investment rounds and advised other early stage companies within AI, media, and music. His other passions lie within hip-hop and sports, synonymous with spearheading growth and innovation. Indy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to speak.
Your company is called AI Music, which sounds very smart, but also a bit nebulous. And AI can mean a lot of different things. So what does AI mean in the context of what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. So I think going to the name is actually quite interesting because in company inception, we were really toying and kind of deciding what do we call, you know, the company. And we kind of set up a website. We called ourselves AI Music. And then we went to a conference and started to get a lot of interest just because of the name. And so, you know, we thought, hey, let's just run with it.
It's a good
and
sign. 3 years yes. later,
here we are. Exactly. And that's still the sentiment currently. You know, we have a lot of people just continually kind of questioning what we do, you know, in a positive way. So what do we do? So we have a set of technologies all centered around machine learning and artificial intelligence tools. And we apply those to music, right? So specifically, you know, we have tools which can understand the DNA of a song. So your sections, your BPMs, your tempos, the much more granular information extracted within a song, we can extract that, right? So what does then that mean? It's, if you can understand the DNA of something, you can almost reverse engineer that, right? Mm. So what has that meant in practical terms? It's meant that we've been able to develop a range of, you know, modules. It's an internal word we like to use a lot, and actually generate our music ourselves, right? And that process is quite interesting because if we look back over the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen generative companies, mm-hmm. and the approach to generative music is quite nuanced. And from our point of view, we've come up with a unique way which actually scales music at quality. And then, you know, the third and kind of final area of focus when applying AI to music is actually the adaptation of music. Right. So going on that journey, you can understand its DNA, you can generate something, but actually you can also mutate it because it's then now malleable, right? And hence you can then effectively shape change a song or a set of songs from something which is, or historically which is static, to something which is much more dynamic depending on the actual application.
Mm. I have so many questions from all of that. I've been scribbling furiously. Why don't, as the first point, backing up, you know, these are fascinating ideas and things that you're doing. But who is your, you know, people coming up to you at conferences, who is your buyer and how are you addressing their need? What is it that they say, oh my God, you've solved this problem? I mean, it's fascinating that you're able to generate music. It's fascinating that you have adaptive music. I guess I'm trying to understand who buys it, at what stage they're buying it. You know, is it adapted to the situation they want and then it's locked? Or do they buy something that mutates as they have it? Ultimately, who is your consumer and what is their pain point that you're addressing?
Yeah, I mean, from over the last couple of years, you know, we've worked quite technically within the AI space to understand, you know, the range of tools we have. And from that, you know, music is, of course, you know, a creative form. But it's also how music is written, how it's structured, is also at the intersection of math as well. So having said that, I think within this, particularly the music sync space and the usage of music, working with music is actually sometimes, you know, quite difficult, right? So for example, whether you're an agency or you're a brand, or even if you're, you know, your regular kind of YouTube blogger who wants to find and use music, it can be challenging sometimes. So let's say, you know, you want to find a song. There's thousands of songs out there in the world, and navigating and understanding specifically what you want can be challenging, right?
So is it a discovery engine then? I mean, to sort of pull it to a phrase that would make sense to me, if I'm an agency and I'm looking for music, this would help me discover the track I need?
Yeah, exactly. So from a step-by-step journey, we enable, through the use of, for example, you know, genetic algorithms, to source and find a song from our library. So it saves you kind of scouring the web for weeks on end to find the perfect track for your given application. And then once you've actually found your song, typically, you know, you have to try and find the licenses for that. Even, for example, in the music production space, it's kind of defined by, let's say, use case, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, or territory, or, you know, it's ring fence for a certain time, right? And then even once you've jumped through those first two hurdles, you have to edit the song, right? You have to think about, okay, I've got an ad, or I've got a project which is 18 seconds long, but the track which I want to use is 3 minutes long. How on earth am I going to find the most relevant 18 seconds of a song to fit what I want to use it for? Right. And what that has kind of left us with is this kind of bespoke, one-size-fits-all usage of music. So it's weeks on end, it's cumbersome workflows, which mean that, you know, if you're really trying to target, particularly in the media and advertising space, and resonate with new audiences, you're kind of at the perils of the music industry and difficult workflows, and trying to find and navigate through all of that is tricky. Yeah, so from our perspective, through, you know, a service-led business model approach, we have the tools which help you navigate almost instantly the song you want. So let's say, hey, I want a happy song. We can understand in what context happy means. And given that we generate our own music and work with artists to generate music, there are very, very simple licensing structures in place, because it's at scale, right? And ultimately, we want our clients, such as brands and agencies, to have the freedom and the degrees of freedom to operate and use music however they want. And, you know, the third stage is, okay, so we have post-production tools which literally fit the music for, let's say, a video, or let's say for a context to which a listener is in. And what became and is very apparent to us is this whole idea of hyper-personalization, right? If you completely democratize how music is found, how it's developed, how it's even edited, we think about hyper-personalization, and the real driver for us is the notion of adaptive music.
Okay, I want to break. There are three questions that came out of what you shared just then. The first is the enabling you to discover a song. Now, is that discover a song only within your library, or does it help me discover a song within the pantheon of music that's out there?
Mm. Yeah, so actually we get a lot of requests, and a lot of people wanting to understand that. It's actually both.
Okay. So it's like I could license the ability to find that, I could apply that algorithm, license that service from you to other libraries other than your own, or is it?
Exactly. Okay.
And then the other, then sort of linked to that, is oftentimes when I had a creative production company slash agency, it wasn't so much we could even say, I want a happy song, but we could say, we use this temp track and it had the right feel, you know, I want something that feels like this other track. So I couldn't articulate that DNA, but is it something where I could provide a track and similar aspects of that track would create a query?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the way we think about it, searching for music is not by, for example, by mood or only genre, right? It's so much more subjective than that. You know, that particular feeling that you have might be different to mine or somebody else,
right?
So how do we capture that from a technical point of view? You know, we have algorithms which consider kind of sentiments, which consider even kind of visuals for, let's say, you know, the video, right? I can understand that tonality and kind of weighing and weighting all of this out can actually enable, you know, that discovery process. So we're kind of trying to take it a step further. So, I mean, for us, we had this debate internally, you know, a couple of years ago, what is a good song? No one can answer that because we all have different permutations and variations of that based on our current mood, our context, how we grew up.
I was just thinking of the road trip I took with my son, and we absolutely did not agree on what was a good song. So yeah, it's definitely varies by person and then within generations. So then the last piece I wanted to understand a little bit better is the post-production tools piece. So is it something that integrates with Pro Tools, or is it a standalone tech? Does it integrate with the Avid software or Premiere, or how do you bolt it into, if I'm a production company and I'm cutting something, how do I put it into my workflow? How do I add that into what I've got going already?
Sure. Yeah. So right now we have a self-serve studio platform, and that is, you know, cloud-based, and everything runs seamlessly for the end user being, you know, the ad production person, the in-house brand team, or for example, you know, the agency, right? So from a workflow point of view, let's take an audio ad as a great example. You know, so your brand and agency may provide a voiceover, and from that we can understand the nature of it, if it's happy, if it's sad, kind of what they're talking about. And, you know, in real time, you may select variants of the music that you want, 10, 20, 30 tracks, depending on, you know, the size of the budget, depending on the brief. And from a post-production and also kind of in a real-time production sense, that music then fits itself to that voiceover. So we start thinking about the usage of time, right? As we kind of mentioned earlier, the 3 minutes versus 18 seconds aspect. But also what's interesting for us is that, you know, a voiceover or even just a video doesn't necessarily just plonk on top of music, right? They're so integrated, they're so intertwined, and it's an entire experience.
Well, that's exactly why I asked how it was integrated to the creative people's process, because oftentimes the people who are doing the post work are, it's a creative agency that has editors who are taking the music track, maybe not even just one track, but several tracks, and they're adding sound design. And then they're using this as the roller coaster track in which to add the visual journey to it. So that's why I was trying to understand, I mean, because oftentimes it starts with the music and then the visuals are added and sound design is layered on from, in terms of this is where the agency may feel they're adding the value. So I guess, have you had any people either want it to be integrated into Premiere or something, you know, editing software, or I guess because I'm not understanding how the process works. I mean, in a really nuts and boltsy way, which maybe is beyond this conversation, but I'm a kind of nuts and bolts kind of gal. So if I have my spot that I'm cutting, at what point in my cutting it do I access the self-service studio platform?
Sure. So let's say you've cut your initial creative. What you can do is upload it, and then you'll have, for example, on the platform, functionality where you can add the music on. So it's almost like a step-by-step. You have your initial creative, whether it's an audio ad or a video, and then the music element, right? To your point, have people started talking about how it'll integrate into existing functionality? Yeah, mm-hmm. Indeed so, because, you know, in your instance, you're almost coming from it from a music point up, right? You're building the music.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. And so we've seen examples of actually both use cases, uh-huh, where you're coming from it music bottom up, or also kind of music top down, right? So, you know, over time we'll kind of make the product more elaborate. But in terms of where it can go, these are definitely the kind of ideas,
right,
and feedback, to be honest, that we're getting in such a early product. And what's interesting of what you just mentioned is this notion of sonic design, right? So if let's go for a super easy example. Everyone knows the Netflix sonic ID, right? Let's say, for example, how do you incorporate things like that? How do you incorporate sonic IDs and things that people know and recognize, mm-hmm, within this entire framework? Mm-hmm. But also think about scaling, let's say, the music bed for different contexts within that. I think that's, for me, is the evolution of something like this.
Right. Well, and that segues nicely into adaptive, right? And so there, I'm curious of how dynamic is it? I know that if I'm, especially in a streaming, like a freemium streaming context, I'm listening to some music, an ad comes on, and if the music bed for the ad is not jarring, I'm probably going to be more engaged with that advertisement. You probably have lift numbers. Is there research around whether you have better lift if you do have something that's in the same DNA family?
Yeah. So, you know, then that use case, we've tested it out quite rigorously, I think, over the last 18 months. Mm-hmm. We've worked with a couple of US brands, such as Cox Telecommunications. And what we then did was, through an A-B test, compared, you know, a static, generic, one-size-fits-all audio ads versus multiple permutations of that ad. So those permutations were in jazz, hip-hop, EDM, and more genres. Mm-hmm. And what we proved out actually is there's an increase in engagement of around 240%, right?
Wow.
So you have a banner ad and two times the original amount of clicks that we kind of produce. And of course, that's naturally prevailed into us doing more work and specifically focusing in that area, because, you know, from an ROI point of view,
right,
you're optimizing your working dollars, right? And if you can do that by scaling content at an efficient cost, then, you know, it almost sounds too good to be true.
Well, right? Exactly. I mean, I guess how dynamic can it really be? Is it all in your example, your research example, where you had your A-B test, and then in your sort of B category, you had various types of adaptive music. How fluid is it? You know, if I'm a listener, how does, without having, I mean, is the tech embedded, at what point is the tech sniffing out the music I'm listening to? Is it sniffing it out on Spotify? Is it on my phone? Where, at what point, so it can know to match? I guess that's my, where I'm not understanding the access point.
Sure. So from our point of view, given that this is much more of a creative solution, mm-hmm. we plug into the programmatic framework.
Right. Okay.
So we plug into the delivery pipes within the audio space, and by working with partners, we understand the first party data of, let's say, what you're listening to, which is something they already have anyway.
Right.
So in terms of the dynamism, it's almost like a spectrum. You can go as simple as the top 20 genres, uh-huh. or you can go to the subgenres, or you can even go to things like weather and time of day. And that starts to build out an entire cluster of how kind of targeted the adaptive creative can be. It's very much sitting behind the programmatic framework in this instance.
That's fascinating. So now going back to another piece you mentioned way at the beginning around licensing, because everybody struggles with the music budget and, you know, how many needle drops and how where is it playing and what's it doing? When you have something like this, how on earth do you price it? I mean, I guess, is it, well, I guess there are several questions to unpack. Is AI generated music licensable, ownable? Or is it a fee that you're purchasing? Like, is it a full buyout? How does that work?
Yeah. So I think from our point of view, we're definitely coming at this from a service-led mm-hmm. business model approach. Mm-hmm. So we're defining and scoping out this concept called music as a service. Mm-hmm. So from something which used to be bespoke, one size fits all, stop start approach to using and licensing mm-hmm. music. What if, for example, you have a suite of tools where you pay monthly fees and you can go in and ultimately just do whatever you want with music for whatever application, for whatever context. And from your point of view, all those barriers which used to kind of limit the music usage are no longer there. So for us, what does that then enable the brand or the artist or anyone who just wants to use music? You then have the ability to, for yourself, optimize your own content, reach and resonate with your audience, where historically maybe you couldn't do so, all through the lens of, you know, adaptive and scaled music.
Okay, question for you. If you're a YouTuber, you've used this to put your music together on a piece that you've done, and then you're like, you know what, I think I'm going to stop my service because I'm no longer making things that require music. Does the music disappear because I'm no longer on the cloud, or did it because it was on in the service when the piece was created? Do you see? Happens when I stop? Like, it, since I didn't purchase it, it's almost like I rented it, right? I mean, I guess. So, or is it not? Is it like I purchased it because I bought it then? It's like a stock photo that I have so many credits and I use up my credits and then I'm okay with that, how I used it in that instance. Is that how it goes?
Yeah, that's a good analogy. It's, through a service layer approach, if you use the music within your subscription, it's yours. You can have it because you've ultimately paid for it in that sense, right? So we're not coming at this from a licensing specific music asset licensing approach. Mm-hmm. You know, from our point of view, yes, we have an abundance of music, but at its core, we are a music and tech service provider.
Right.
So from our point of view, it's if you want to use the music, great, you can, because our value is A plus B equals C. where you have the music plus the technology equaling the value add service. So from, you know, from our point of view, if let's say in the future a YouTuber would like to kind of cancel their subscription and already has music from us on their videos, not a problem.
Mm-hmm. I see. And in terms of your music as a service, there's a very different economic situation between, you know, YouTuber X and NBC Universal, for instance. So is it a, how do you price? You price differently for the, you know, or an agency, a small agency, a mid-size agency, you know, how do you determine, and also the amount they're going to use it is different. So is it that you offer different amounts of usage, that you scale it by the size of the purchaser? How are you setting up your pricing around your service?
Yeah, we get into the meat and bones of subscription modeling, which I find always fascinating. You know, currently, if you look at some similar services in the music production space, they kind of tier with respect to use case and application, right? And also, of course, territory. And we're trying to lower those barriers and have an all-you-can-eat model. I do think, for example, like from a practical and realistic sense, the usage of music in that YouTube example, it's always going to be different and has different permutations and scale limits to what, you know, the NBC example has, right? So, you know, from our point of view as a business, we have to really understand what segments we're targeting. Right. Is it the kind of long tail? Is it the UGC market? Or is it, like you said, you know, the middle agency layer? And for us, the brands and agencies hold the budgets currently for us to really prove out music as a service and adaptive music and the whole engagement play, which we're quite focused on. So that will inherently over time prove out an uplift or an uplift in whatever the use case. And then that will inform us moving forward about different tiered subscription models for the rest of the market, shall we say.
Right. It's interesting. And 240% increase in engagement is quite impressive. So I think people's eyes must light up when you talk about that. Where do you see the greatest value and growth at this intersection? Where, when you're plotting the growth and the white space, where are you seeing it happen?
I think the whole media and music landscape is ever evolving. It's super fast paced, and that's something that I've learned over the last few years. I think what we're seeing is huge monoliths such as the Spotify's, such as the Amazons of the world, really spearheading and utilizing what a consumer wants and needs.
Right.
So what I think is happening is it's so ubiquitous in terms of how we consume audio and media in general. Mm-hmm. You know, I wake up, I listen to a podcast, I can listen to the radio, I listen to my streaming service, I'm on a Zoom call, for example. All these different permutations offer enormous opportunity for us.
Right.
So what that means is I definitely think that all these media formats and different segments such as wellness, gaming, advertising are kind of converging, right? And this is entirely opening up the market within music and audio. So I think as things become more ubiquitous, as we drive towards this notion and idea of mass customization, you know, there's a lot of opportunity within that. Things that we're not even seeing now, right? I think, for example, in the next few years, we'll look back at this point and be like, damn, I consumed audio like that. This is crazy. How was I ever doing that? Because there's this entirely new kind of idea and way of consuming your music.
Right. Well, which actually leads to, we're nearing the end of our conversation. It went really fast. So, you know, we just talked about looking ahead and new tech. Let's pull it back and think a little bit old school. What was the last, you know, book you read? analog entertainment or information? How are you staying informed?
Yeah. And do you mean actual physical books?
Yeah, actually, let's go absolutely old school, actual physical book.
Oh, exactly right. It needs some thought. It was a small book, and that's quite telling in itself. Huh. It was Harvard Business Review on mental toughness.
On which?
And it was only 100 pages. Harvard Business Review on mental toughness.
Mental toughness. That's interesting.
Yeah. And it's a small book because I kind of get bored reading beyond 100 pages.
That's interesting too.
And I'll just get super sick and tired of it and just go to Audibles and consume an entire book within a day.
Right.
At 1.6 speed.
No, really? You speed it up?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I can't. I can't do. I do like Audible for listening to things that if I don't have the time to actually sit and read. How about other things then? How do you stay informed? Are there particular newsletters, blogs, Medium people that you follow, Twitter writers? What is it that you sort of spin through to feel like you have a handle on your industry and the landscape?
Yeah, there's this. So I actually have a finance background, and prior to AI Music, I was in the venture and venture capital space. So there's this idea of a barbell investing strategy. So on one side, you invest in super short-term bonds, which is then offset against super long-term bonds, without going super in-depth towards that. But I kind of extracted that and wanted to understand how can I consume my media with respect to that strategy. So what actually that turns into for me is, on one end of the spectrum, extremely short updates, either on Instagram, extremely small blogs where I can literally absorb content within minutes, right? On a day-to-day or an hour-to-hour basis. And that kind of keeps me informed with, you know, the happenings of the world. You know, on the flip side, on the long-term side, where I think consuming like books which stand the test of time is really fascinating for me. So there's actually one book I'm currently reading / listening to called The Evolution of New Markets by Paul Gorosky. And what I try to do is, by taking those two strategies, is come somewhere in the middle, right? So I try to think about devising my own cyclical trends, my own view. What do I actually think about what's going to happen in 2 to 3 years or 5 years, just by kind of matching those two together.
Very interesting. What's the most interesting thing that you've learned recently? Just a nugget of something that was like, oh, this is a connection, an aha.
Mm. It might be slightly less kind of academic, but I just completed the Last Dance series on Netflix, the Michael Jordan story. Yeah. And the aha moment is, damn, this is what it takes. This is really what it takes over a long time to dominate and win with whatever you're doing, from a business point of view, from a going to market point of view, from enabling a new technology within a completely different industry. Having that mentality, having that drive and focus has to be second to none. And for me, like watching that, especially over the last few episodes, I was like, okay, it's game time now. So that's 100%. That's something that I'm really trying to work towards and live by, to be honest.
Fascinating. I saw some early clips before it was, you know, way back when, and it's on my list of things. Here in the States, it's not on Netflix. So it's figuring out how to access it, quite frankly, is the stumbling block for me. So. See, that's something that needs fixing. I need to be able to access what I want, where I want it, when I want it, how I want it. Ah, I'm an unhappy consumer. Anyway, we have run out of all of our time. I want to thank you so much for spending time with us, going through your business, how you're using AI. I think it's fascinating. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been very great to talk with you. And I hope that we can execute on what we're talking about and continue with our journey.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open, my production team at Up Next, and of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time right here on Up Next.